Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
Has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two!
Gilmore on a big step!
Oh,
brother! Lead Toledo artist. You get 21.
4:28 to go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Jordan. Open. Chicago with the lead!
Hello, and welcome back to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason Mann. With me, as always, is Rich Craich, and we are joined again by Seth Partnow of Nylon Calculus. Seth, welcome back.
How's it going?
And we are now going to talk about Sean Marion going through the basic numbers. He is 41st in win shares all time, 94th in win shares for 48, 56th in box score plus minus, and 28th in value over replacement player. He was twice on the All-NBA third team. He was once in the top 10 in win shares per 48, four times in win shares altogether for a season in top 10, and then five times in the top 10 value over replacement player. As far as other lists goes, he was 152nd in the Slam 500, so they did not necessarily think of him as top 50 candidate, but I do think he has a case. He was incredibly versatile. He had small forward skills and size, but was able to defend very well power forwards. He played that position most of his career. Obviously was one of the key cogs, along with Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire in the 7 seconds or less Suns, who helped revolutionize the league, also played very effectively for a long time and produced well, despite not really having the role of a go-to scorer. So, Seth, how do you feel about Sean Marion?
I think you're, first of all, saying he was a key cog is I think he was the key cog in those Suns teams. Sure, they still would have been good, but they would not have been a contender if they didn't have the ability for someone, like you said, who could was kind of a small forward but could do all the power forward stuff. Those Suns teams, and this is, you know, it's an argument that's going to be had for all time about, you know, Mike D'Antoni and defense. Those Suns teams, despite having one of the worst point guard defenders and one of the worst center defenders of recent memory on the team, were about an average defensive team. And a lot of that has to be due to Marion's versatility, his ability to play passing lanes, his ability to protect the rim, his ability to rebound. And so without him doing all those things, plus being a terror on the break and being, you know, willing to, with some grumbling, if you've read the book 7 seconds or less, to be kind of a third, fourth, or fifth option on offense. Without all those things, those teams don't work. So I'm top 50, I don't know, but if you ask me if Sean Marion's a Hall of Famer, it's an unabashed yes for me.
I'm right with you, Seth, on that. As far as, you know, top 50, we'll talk a little bit more about him as we kind of break down his resume a little bit. I have a tough time with that, but as like one of my all-time favorite players to watch, he's right up there. And in terms of a Hall of Fame, he's absolutely that. Top 50 is tough. I mean, that's really, really tough to say. Is he the, you know, when you really think about it, you know, top 50 players of all time. I don't know if Sean Marion's that, but I mean, I think he's worth talking about at least, because I do think, you know, and there's been a huge influx of people that are starting to more and more defend him and talk about him and really try to give him his praise that he absolutely deserves that he didn't get, you know, at the time. But there's still some people that don't quite, as you said, understand how big of a cog he was for those Phoenix Suns teams and how good he was before, you know, Steve Nash came to Phoenix and how good, you know, he was in Dallas and different stops along the way. I mean, this guy was almost until, you know, this past year in Miami, was always just like a a solid hand and like a good part of a ton of really, really good teams as well. It's incredible how big his career really, or how, you know, important his career really was outside of, we just kind of think of those 7 second or less stuff. And there's a lot of stuff outside of those that are really, really good.
I think he's also a guy who, you know, we don't have a still, even, you know, at the analytics revolution, we still don't have a many great ways of measuring individual defense. I think he is one of the main kind of people hurt by that. I think if we had a way to kind of better quantify individual defense, he would have been one of the best kind of wing power forward defenders of kind of that mid 2000 period. And the fact that he made like one all second team defense or something like that.
I just checked. He did not ever make a all defensive team, which surprises me.
Yeah.
I guess it doesn't to an extent because of the reputation the Suns had at the time, which obviously was unfair. But that does surprise me at least a bit.
Yeah. And so that's, you know, you don't have Draymond Green if there wasn't Sean Marion before him to show that's a, you know, now Green has kind of added some more things offensively that maybe Marion didn't do, but kind of that role of the guy who kind of with athleticism and length and kind of moxie can make up for bulk, without Marion showing the league that could be really an effective thing in the modern game. You don't get kind of the modern kind of small ball four. And I don't know how much, if you're talking top 50, how much kind of influence counts, but that's certainly his legacy in those terms is if that's a plus, if those kind of things are a plus factor, that's a pretty big one for him, I think.
Yeah.
Kind of the New York Dolls of stretch fours.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, one, and this is obviously just one series, but the way that he defended LeBron in the 2011 finals, I think has to is a good kind of showcase for how good of a defender that he was. And maybe you can kind of think of, OK, well, if he was so good in that situation, then, you know, maybe. Even though the defense is difficult to measure, maybe we can kind of consider Marion such an elite defender that you could throw him in the top 50 and feel good about that.
He was what, 32 at that time? I mean, five years past he's a guy who, you know, kind of morphed from being absurdly freaky to merely very good, you know, on an NBA level athlete. But that just kind of shows that after a decline, that's still where he was, that he's one of the guys who, you know, no one's ever done a great job on, you know, when I went on LeBron, but did a very good job, you know, on the best player of the modern era, or kind of certainly the best player of the post Jordan era, with possible apologies to Tim Duncan, I guess. No one has done a better job over a length of time than Marion did in that series, I think it's fair to say.
In terms of just kind of looking at the advanced stats and comparisons of people in his position, which is hard really to do with a guy like Sean Marion, because I just don't know if he fits in any pocket of quite the position that he fits in, or, you know, he doesn't jump off the page in terms of a lot of the individual stats of points, you know, assists, rebounds. He's just really good at, like, everything, which is hard sometimes to quantify. You look at win shares per 48, though, he's 30th among his era in his position. Sixth in win shares, which definitely shows out just how versatile and how good he was, you know, amongst overall. 32nd in defensive box plus minus. I feel like he's better than that, but and 6th in value over replacement. Yeah. I mean, that one really, when I look at that, I go, I don't think he's the 32nd best, you know, forward in his era, and that's tough. That's hard.
Yeah, this is the part where I say that defensive blocks plus minus isn't a great stat. But anyway, carry on.
We don't use it much. Yeah. So in terms of overall in position, 58th in win shares per 48, 14th all time in win shares amongst his position, which definitely is something worth noting. 48th in defensive blocks plus minus, as we mentioned, and then 10th in value over replacement players. So value replacement and win shares definitely show him as just an elite level forward for you know, not only his era, but of all time. You know, the other stuff, the rate stats and that sort of stuff don't really show that out. But I mean, those sheds do show something. So I he's a damn good player. I mean, that's, there's no other way around it.
And, like, and I think that if when you take away dial out a little bit, when you bring the focus, you know, up a level from just his individual stats to the effect he had on the court.
Sure.
That's where him enabling the Suns to play the way they did while still being competitive defensively. You start to see it in kind of, you know, some that kind of on off kind of stuff. And that's, and, you know, that's a pretty strong measure of a guy who has a pretty enormous influence on his team and kind of makes things go. Obviously it doesn't work without, you know, Nash pulling the strings, and it works less well with without Amari, but they did just fine when they, you know, swapped Amari out for Diaw. So the year that Amari had microfracture surgery. So, you know, the Marion was kind of that constant there that allowed them kind of right there with Nash to be that, you know, contending level team that was frankly pretty unlucky to never make the finals.
Yeah, for sure. And I forgot about that weird period where, like, 2 years where he was like in Miami and then in Toronto very briefly before he resurfaced in Dallas. Like, it was so weird how, like, irrelevant he kind of became for just like that period of time. Like, almost like he disappeared. Like, he was, he still was a pretty good player, but I don't really like remember specific moments of when he played during that time, but I'm guessing like not necessarily as well utilized as in those places as he was in Phoenix, or at least not like in, he's really not in the same role.
Yeah. And he hadn't quite found a place and hadn't quite himself morphed into kind of the role player guy yet. Where he was in Dallas over those last couple of years. And you know, some of that is situation and not being, not being able to be used kind of in the same kind of high tempo, a lot of cutting situations, and some of it was probably down to him, you know, not necessarily having, in many systems having, you know, what you might call old man skills. Never a great shooter, though he was a reasonable 3-point shooter in Phoenix. Never a great ball handler. And so just kind of had to find how he could be effective again, kind of. And that, I think, being in a solid system where he could play off a guy in Dallas, where he could, you know, play off Dirk, not the same way he played off of, you know, Nash in Phoenix, but someone else to kind of draw the focus, that probably helped him kind of rediscover some effectiveness. Mm-hmm.
I've always wondered, do you think the way he shoots and the kind of the silliness of it has hurt sort of his reputation or the way that some people perceive him? Because it's a silly shot. It's so weird. And I've always, it's always like, oh, there's no way that's going in. Oh, it's going in type thing. Every time he shoots the ball, and it's funny. I don't know if that hurts his reputation, but I know from friends, you know, kind of casual basketball friends, they'll kind of say, oh, he's not that good. I mean, look at how the guy shoots. I'm like, no, he, like, it doesn't matter. Like, I don't care how he shoots. It goes in. Like, it doesn't, but I feel like there's something with that. I don't know if it's just my silly friends or some stuff that I've sort of seen, but I've always kind of wondered that because it's super silly. It's weird. It doesn't look like it should work.
Yeah, no, but the funny thing is, and like the actual, like, no one would ever teach. I don't even understand how, like, you learn to shoot that way. But
yeah, why was there a high school coach that just like locked the door to the gym and said, no, Sean, you do not leave.
If you're Sean Marion's high school coach, you just, all right. If you can imagine what Sean, like, high school Sean Marion must have, right, been like, do you, Sean, is, I think, a lot of, the actual, like, it wasn't a pretty motion, but it was a repeatable motion. And, like, you know, he didn't get like side spin on the ball or anything. Like, I mean, the biggest problem with it is that he released it from such a low point that he, you know, he needed a ton of space to get it off. And so, but, you know, he's a not incompetent 3-point shooter and for most of his career, a pretty good free throw shooter, wasn't he? So, you know, it's,
yes. Yeah, he was. Yeah.
81%. Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of an aesthetic thing that people wanted to hold against him. And, you know, there's plenty of guys who can't shoot who have, you know, better form than he did. It's just kind of the aesthetics of what is a pretty funny looking shot, probably, you know, coloring opinion of him a little more than maybe kind of the effectiveness would indicate.
Yeah, I get a little bit annoyed with, like, mechanic snobs. I mean, I understand, like, you know, it's important to have them, and, you know, but I do feel like if somebody makes something that works and can, like, make it work for them and, you know, as you said, repeatable and, you know, then make it effective in a basketball game, then that, you know, that should be good enough.
Yeah, no, and they're, like you said, they're, you know, the low release point is the biggest problem, rather than anything else about the mechanics. And the reason when people are being mechanic snobs, it's that there's something that, you know, is going to be prone to being different on every shot, and then that, you know, you never know where the ball's going. Sure. But if you have an ugly shot that's the same shot every time, you have a chance for it to be a decent shot. And you know, he's never a great shooter, obviously, but I mean, you know, he was in his Phoenix days, he was 34-35% 3-point shooter, if I'm remembering correctly, and that's, yeah, you know, not on huge volume, but not a guy you can just wave at and say go ahead out there.
Yeah, I mean, he was a weapon. He helped stretch the floor. He was absolutely, you know, you need to defend him for sure.
Yeah, he was, you know, not to get all fantasy, but he was like a 9 category player in fantasy.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Since,
yeah.
I mean, because, you know, he was he would make enough threes and did steals, blocks, rebounds. Basically, the only thing he didn't do was get assists.
Yeah.
But never didn't turn the ball over much either. So, anyway, that's he's kind of. So go ahead.
I said, Andy, the cool nickname, The Matrix.
Well, that's true. Kenny Smith helped him out there.
Yeah. Kenny Smith's one good contribution as a...
No. We like Kenny Smith.
Yeah, I don't mind Kenny Smith, but yeah.
He's better than Reggie.
It's been a while for Kenny Smith that he's done a lot for me. But anyway, anything else? All right. Well, thank you, Seth, for joining us again. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks, everyone, for checking us out. You can find us at hardwoodparoxysm.com. We are part of the HP network of podcasts, which you can find on iTunes. We actually have our own feed on iTunes now. Search for Over and Back in iTunes, and you can appreciate it for either one if you would leave a review and or rating. It really helps us in the iTunes rankings. You can find us also at overandbacknba.com. It's our forums where we have a discussion about great NBA history issues. There's some really fun stuff going on there, so check it out if you're interested in discussing basketball history. And that's about it. So thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll be back again soon.